Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
I'm Farai Chidea, and this is One with Farai, a show about how visionaries integrate life, work, and passion. I'm delighted to speak with New York Times bestselling author Lalita Tatamy, whose new book, Citizens Creek, is about Black Native Americans. A former vice president of Sun Microsystems, Tatamy left the corporate world to write historical novels, leading to Cane River becoming Oprah's summer book pick in 2001. Lita, it's great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, Farai.
So in the interest of full disclosure, we know each other and have even spent some time critiquing each other's work. And on this show, One with Farai, I speak with people I know as well as people I don't about their work and their passions. As far as passion is concerned, you just went all in. How and why did you decide to leave a big corporate job to become a writer?
Well, it was it wasn't quite as straightforward as it might seem. I had an energizing career for any number of years, and that sort of moved on to not quite as fulfilling as I would like it. And it was starting to move into soul deadening when I decided I needed to do something else. And it was more that I left to fill an empty space than I jumped in as a writer. It was only when I had time and space to think that I decided that I had some stories to tell and I wanted to tell them through writing. And I decided to go for historical fiction. I wasn't as interested in nonfiction and reporting facts as I was in trying to recreate times, early 1800s to early 1900s, which particularly interested me. And I wanted a reader to sense what it would be like to live then.
Yeah, you took a leap of faith and it worked out, you know, with bumps in the roads like everything. But so many people have dreams and they don't fulfill them. What do you think gave you the personal strength to just do it?
Because I felt that I had something to give and I wasn't giving it. And I couldn't figure out how to give it. And the only way to do that was to let go of pretty much everything and then to see how I could start again. And so that's what I did. It was equal parts bravery, courage, and foolishness.
Well, let's dig into Citizens Creek. So give me a taste of what this book is about.
So Citizens Creek is really about this country's formative years, and it's a multi-generational saga, and it covers slavery and Native Americans and Blacks at an intersection at a time when the U.S. government wanted Indian land and removed Indians and their property, which included their slaves, off of that land and moved them into Oklahoma. So Citizens Creek takes place in Alabama, it takes place in Florida, and ultimately in Indian territory that became Oklahoma. This time, this book is not about my family, as the first two were, but it is still historical fiction, and it's about Muscogee-speaking Black Native Americans who began as slaves and carved out their own unique place within the tribe and ultimately rose to own their own ranch, to run their own cattle, and formed an oil dynasty.
Yeah, you alternate perspectives in this book and you get into the heads of both male and female characters, intergenerational, who make huge sacrifices for their families. What does it take to do that, to get into the lives of people who are going through these immense struggles? How do you write?
Several people who write historical fiction write in this way, but certainly not all. But I start with research, learn absolutely everything I can about the time period, about the politics, about weather patterns, about the people that lived within those times, everything I can, year by year, decade by decade, around the period that I want to write about. And once I have just an enormous amount of raw data, then I start to zero in on inserting characters into the mix. And those characters then start to take on their own personality and start to react to what those times were like. So a lot of my writing process is organic. I do some of the things that you should do. I make outlines and I have timelines that are pretty rigid, and I know when characters come in and when they are born and how they live and when they die. So I have some things that are inflexible, but there are also a lot of organic elements that I can't predict, and they happen, and characters sometimes take me places that take me fairly far away from what I originally intended, and I have to circle back and pull them back. I wish I had a recipe. I don't. But in order to inhabit the characters, and especially to inhabit different points of view, I just have to live as those characters. And that's what a lot of rewriting is about. It is laying out the story, laying out the plot lines, getting all of those down, and then starting to really be a character. And how would this character react during that time as a man, or as a young woman, or as an old woman, or as the head of a family, or as an abandoned member of a family? And that's why it takes me at least 14 drafts to turn out a book.
You are a consummate rewriter. You really go all in, and you don't stop until you've polished the jewel. But tell me very briefly about Cow Tom, who is one of your central characters. Who is he?
Cow Tom was the man who drew me into this story. And this is based on a real character. There was a Cow Tom who lived in Oklahoma, and he was the slave of an Indian master. And he was bought into slavery when he was 10 by this Indian chief. But he had a unique gift, as he was a translator. And he was one of the few people within the tribe who could speak both English and the Muscogee dialects. So he served as a translator between the U.S. government and the tribe for their business. He also served for the U.S. government and assisted generals. So Cow Tom was not your typical story of a slave and a master, but he was fascinating and smart and determined to buy himself free and to buy his family free, and then to rise in the tribe and to make sure that all the freedmen of the tribe had equal rights within the tribe, and made an incredible difference in tribal politics and U.S. politics.
So he, the real man, and people like him who truly lived, were straddling in some ways three identities: as a Black person, as a person within a Native American culture, whether or not they were mixed race, because some of the Black Native Americans were mixed and some were not, and as an American. It strikes me that that part of our history has been, you know, barely touched in history books. I mean, do you feel like you kind of discovered some insights into that forging cauldron of our nation?
Yes. And one of the reasons that these stories interest me so much is that I think that it's important to tell the stories that haven't already been told, is to challenge the idea of one stereotypical story. As soon as you say that a person was owned by another, a person was a slave, mentally we go to a certain place in our heads and we know that story. But we don't really. There were so many times and places in history where individual people made a difference, and we could have made different choices as a country. And those are the nuggets that I love uncovering, because I think that it's important to have that mindset going forward. We can make a difference.
So you've made a point of seeking pre-orders on your book, and it's part of the mechanics of how to break what I think of as this literary conundrum in modern life, the way that literary books, fiction and nonfiction, are challenged to reach audiences in a time of what's called continuous partial attention, which means I'm talking to you, but I'm on my cell phone on Facebook posting the selfie while we're talking. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So tell me more about this campaign and how it relates not just to you, but to books in general.
This campaign was actually born of a little bit of panic and fear. I lost my editor 2 months before the book was getting ready to be published, and I was orphaned for a very short period of time, but I was orphaned, and it woke me up to the fact that if I was going to get this story out there, I was going to have to do a lot of personal work myself to make that happen. And so I decided that what I was going to do is I was going to try to convince people in advance, starting with my fan base, to pre-order the book on faith. And I felt that I needed to do this in order to try to break through to get on the New York Times bestseller list. And I wanted to do this because I think that it's very difficult often for African-American stories told by African-Americans to bubble up and hit that list and therefore to be read by a wider audience. And so I have, with a vengeance, gone after a pre-order campaign. And I was told that the magic number was about 3,000 books that needed to be sold by launch day. And it is working.
Just in general, do you feel at all discouraged by the sort of travails of the publishing industry? Or in your case, you have kind of taken the bull by the horns and said, I'm going to do something about this. But there's a big difference between being a writer, being a published writer, and being a published writer who actually sells books.
Correct.
Yeah, it sounds as if you certainly haven't given up on that. But do you think that we're in a rough spot as a society with the general idea of embracing writers for the work that they do?
Yes, I do. And I have highs and lows around this entire notion. I know so many writers, and they're wonderful, wonderful writers, who can't necessarily get their work out. And they're willing to toil at their craft and do what it takes, but they still can't break through. And of course, that dismays me quite a bit. But what are you going to do? We are where we are. And I still think that the written word matters. And if you think something matters, then you'll do whatever it takes to try to advance the cause. And that's what I'm doing. It does not make me happy that it is so difficult to get readership. And part of it is we're just evolving into a different society with different values and shorter attention spans. But either we can lament that fact and get depressed, or we can do everything we can to try to change that.
So I have to circle back to your previous books. Red River, I thought, had some amazing battle scenes. It was about citizenship in so many ways, citizenship, equality, and literal fights for survival in America. And Cane River was the book handpicked by Oprah. How did those books change your life?
Very much so. When I hit an enormous amount of success with Oprah for the first book, the experience itself was very surreal. But the positive, very, very positive thing that it did for me, in addition to book sales, obviously, is that I became more open and less in control and more in awe of the things that could happen that you don't expect. And I think without becoming a writer and having that writerly life, which has more flexibility, it's just as tough, and I'm spending just as many hours, but it's more flexibility with that. I don't think I would have been open enough to get married for the first time at 55. I was just way too much in control to do that earlier in my life, I believe. So it changed my life dramatically.
You and your husband are pretty adorable, I have to say.
We try hard. So it was a big change and a welcome change. It's nice to be able to have a second chapter in your life.
Well, on that note, before I let you go, I would like to play a little game that we call Exquisite, where a previous guest on One with Farai asks a question of the current one. So take a listen.
In the household where you grew up, was there any religious training, and what was the attitude towards religion? And then where are you now?
That comes from Scott Carter, who is a playwright of a play called Discord and also the executive producer of Bill Maher's show on HBO. So what do you say, Lita?
I grew up in a household and I was baptized in the Baptist church. My mother went to church every Sunday. My father did not. And so that was a regular part of our growing up. I do not really attend church now, and I consider myself a spiritual being, but not a religious being.
And now it's your turn. You can ask anything of our next guest. We won't tell you who it is, so toss it out.
All right. My question is, what groundbreaking thing would you do if you weren't resource or talent constrained?
I love that. I absolutely love that. So you'll find the answer to Lalita's question on the next episode of One with Farai. Lalita Tatami, author of Citizen's Creek and two other previous novels, thank you for joining us on One with Farai.
Thank you, Farai.
New York Times bestselling writer Lalita Tatami is author of historical novels Cane River, Red River, and the brand new Citizen's Creek. You've been listening to One with Farai, a part of Soundworks from PRI. I'm your host and executive producer, Farai Chidea. This program is produced by Devin Maverick Robbins, and our theme music is by the band Betty. Catch our next show when I sit down with writer and photographer Richard Kadrey, author of 10 novels, including the Sandman Slim series, the latest of which is The Getaway Gods. He's also been immortalized as an action figure. Now, how cool is that? It's Kadrey, the invincible wizard. Visit soundworks.org to find other podcasts as well as past episodes of One with Farai.
One with Farai is supported in part by PRI's New Voices Fund, bringing new perspectives and personalities to public media. Donors to the fund include Maureen and Michael Rutgers and the Sarah and Evan Williams Foundation. Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.